my goddess, it's noon. That means it's the mouse report. Tuesday afternoon, but if you'll jump in the little Wayback Machine 24 hours or so, actually it was a little after 9 a.m. Monday morning.
Fine.
What's going on?
Oh, we just dropped the WMD on Afghanistan-Pakistan border, so...
Okay.
I lived out here for a couple decades, and then things got a little better, and now things are a little worse, so let's see how it goes. I think you're probably familiar with Greg Allen Getty. I'm the protester known as John Del One that knew Brian Wilson when he had his legs.
Oh.
I lived out here for a long time.
Yeah,
so hopefully this is a one-time thing, you know.
Did I turn off my camera and we talked about other things, but where in this country is there a military target where an adversary could use a nuclear weapon killing everyone for a square mile without committing a war crime by murdering innocent civilians? I ask Commander the Richard Lion, Commander Richard the Lionhearted, Abe would call him, Owens. And standing on the tracks of the weapons station that had shipped mass destruction to Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Korea, Vietnam, Central America, and later Iraq and Afghanistan, he said, no, there's nowhere in the world where they could be used. A half a dozen years before the International Court of Justice decision on the illegality of radioactive mass murder of any kind, this should have been the end of the story. We would be planning a going-away party for ourselves at the tracks, but that was before Clinton's betrayals, Trump's WMDs, and the return to power of the very people whose crime drove us there. Well, I was talking about the post-Jim Crow coup there. 2000, that is. So it should come as no surprise that it was business as usual on Hiroshima Day where the nukes came from, the first since our Pentagon supposedly fell asleep to let two drone-piloted plane crashes bring down three New York skyscrapers. The record should speak for itself. Oh, and then in my little 5300 Port Chicago Highway, a murder mystery, I go to my YouTube thing. But just so I can get a better... I noticed my volume from the thing this yesterday at the tracks. Let me go to video. Let me go to...
Oh, we just dropped the WMD on Afghanistan-Pakistan border, so...
Okay.
I lived out here for a couple decades, and then things got a little better, and now things are a little worse, so let's see how it goes. I think you're probably familiar with Greg Allen Getty. I'm the protester known as John Del One that knew Brian Wilson when he had his legs. I lived out here for a long time,
so
hopefully this is a one-time thing, you know.
But it wasn't, it was the second time thing, because the first was the killing for Al-Qaeda in Syria. And I remember that WMD thing was Afghan-Pakistan, but my flyer said, what kind of prehistoric monsters are we to be killing for Al-Qaeda in Syria? The Cretan, the killer Cretans. So that's why I said meet Monday 4/17/17 at 9 a.m. because for all I knew I'd be in jail the next Monday at the tracks 5300 Port Chicago Highway. I wouldn't want to send people out there all by themselves unless they knew that you got to keep your camera running in the presence, and if they arrest you for that, well, that's the case, and you take that and you will win, because of course that's in violation of everything they swore to uphold. But
it's to tall the tree that was in our front yard. But it took me until I was actually doing my dissertation to get what those words were. And basically, it was a unitive experience with that tree as my mother, and that everything in me was of value, was powerful, that it was sourced by nature. It was sourced by this, the source that was larger than anything I'd ever known.
So I may have missed what when you said what those words were. So maybe I missed that. What were the words?
The words that I heard inside myself
were
later on was, I am you and you are me, and all is of equal value, grief and joy, death and life, all of that is you in me and me in you.
Louise, I just think what you've done, because I'm going to have to move on to the next call, but I want, what you just said, I'm going to ask you to repeat it before we let you go, is what you just said is a part of what this show is about. For when we tell our stories, as you said, you connected with Diane's story, with Patricia's story, and then you shared your story, which is so layered, the space between us, the space between your instructor, your teacher, giving you those words without explanation, but saying with such a ferocious attitude, that leaving you with that, him leaving you with that, and then you taking years to decode that. But say the words again, because this is really one of the intentions of the space between us, which you're listening to right now. And we have lines open if you want to call 510.
It's 49ers 5150 to hell if you want to be in the endless bad news and horror. And 5 and dime, 495-1666.
I am her daughter, she is my mother. Without words, she asks me, what do you know? What is your name? Without words, I say, delight in little smut is my name. All of this bound breaks forth in due time. Ecstasy is as real as grief, and both are of equal value. The only work of child that is play, I am she, who dances with the changes of life and death. On a spring evening in the front yard.
Thank you so much. Okay, thank you.
Explosive, or it would have a placard on the front. Oh, that doesn't have a placard on the front. Maybe it is explosive.
You guys don't know what you're doing here.
I am going to block the.
I want you to be defeated under the Geneva Convention for prisoners of war. It has the best of us now.
I'm going to block the. I am blocking the. And it knocked my camera battery off. And the policeman. Could hear the engine rev when he watched it. So he knew the guy was lying when he said I jumped up there.
I was coming.
Take him away.
It's not Greg.
Yeah.
But in the law, he knows the law there and you should arrest him.
So, oh, no. Listen, that was for writing and paint. This is
chalk. And that was Hiroshima Day on 2002, 8602. And I was all by myself. Now, my little flyer doesn't have the date. If you come across killing for Al-Qaeda in Syria, meet Mondays, 9 a.m. at the Tracks, 5300 Portugal Highway, to block weapons. And then it says gregfromtracks@gmail.com. This is Greg from Tracks at YouTube. So you want to see how it's done, come and watch my little video. And you can go out by yourself, and you know there's a federal court order that prohibits torture if you're passive. It means you've got to be chill to the face of torture,
now, you
murder,
watch me go
and
wipe it off.
Done on your person because you
no
don't fight back.
I have no conception
you
anybody would be
back.
Offended by chalk on Hiroshima
Day.
Educating
the
children and what
and
their
the jury acquits
do.
You. In fact, they take it to the court
well,
and
I'm
show you their torture of you, and the jury acquits.
He doesn't know it was chalk. Please.
Wouldn't there be? Could you educate more people being someplace other you can tell. See this?
Nothing could educate. Nothing in the world could possibly educate people better than the weapon for Hiroshima came from this base. And this is the anniversary. The United States of America murdered the children of Hiroshima.
Right. That's when the United States won that war.
Murdered the children. No, they had agreed to the same conditions that were accepted after the bombing was obviously to show Russians that we didn't care about military necessity. We would kill their children by the millions. And that's how we won the Cold War.
Okay.
So you understand, I don't need any of that money. In fact, I don't need any of that life. I would rather be dead. If you're going to say you're going to pull your gun and shoot me in the head, if I don't immediately get up out of the way, I'll say this is a good day to die.
So are you going to harm yourself?
No. I would harm myself by cooperating with murder.
Can you hang one second there?
Yeah.
Hey, sorry.
At a certain point, you got to say, I can't live with that, sir. Supposed to step into harm's way, not run like lily-livered cowards saying you're going to murder all those children in Hiroshima and Nagasaki because the American serviceman is too pissing cowardly to go stick their necks out.
All right, all right. No, not you. Oh, where were we? Let's go to Ivanka. Our Park Avenue Electra did it. She's the one who softened her daddy's leathery heart by forcing him to watch those dreadful pictures of dead and dying babies, eyes fixed on the carnage, scrolling across the screen like Alex in A Clockwork Orange. The obscene photos made Donald squirm, his eye even moistened. Then he began to tremble with rage. What kind of evil animal could kill innocent babies, Ivanka? A monster, Daddy. A real monster. You must do something. This cannot stand. But do what, sweetie? I'll call that guy who works for me, Steve something. He'll know what to do. No, not Bannon, Daddy. He won't do a damn thing. Call Jared. He's already talked to the generals. They're dialing up the targets right now. Ivanka, I'm so glad I picked you to join me in the West Wing. I only worry about the business. Are your brothers really up to it on their own? Or at least that's the story the press lapped up from a White House that is springing more leaks than a Texas pipeline. The narratives we are being presented feature Ivanka as a civilizing force on Trump's troglodyte impulse lies, civilizing in this sense of meaning the cavalier use of U.S. military power in one of the most fraught regions of the world in the name of humanitarianism. Those 59 missiles launched as Trump dined on chocolate cake with a Chinese president had an almost aphrodisiacal effect on the liberal press. Ecstatic op-eds gushed forth from papers coast to coast as if they've been pre-written, just bleh. So I got to take it aside as my own little commentary on the on my friends. I call them because I've seen them do good work in the press, not even backing off the gas, in fact, gunning.
Obama, slavery returns to Africa as migrants sold in open markets in Libya. We grabbed this story via IB Times. Migrants from West Africa are being openly traded in public slave markets across Libya. Survivors have told the International Organization for Migration, IOM, how there are slave markets and private prisons all over Libya. Mohamed Abdikar, IOM's head of operations and emergency, said the situation's dire. One survivor from Senegal spoke of how he was brought into a square where they were put up for sale. An IOM officer based in Niger said IOM Italy has confirmed that story is similar to many other stories reported by migrants. The going rate for a migrant was between $200 and $500 American dollars each, with many forced into captivity for months before they were freed or sold onwards. IOM has helped repatriate 1,500 people back to West Africa so far this year, where it's trying to inform people not to risk the journey to Libya, where they face exploitation. Migrants who go to Libya while trying to get to Europe have no idea of the torture archipelago that awaits them just over the border, said Leonard Doyle, chief IOM spokesman in Geneva. There they become commodities to be bought, sold, and discarded when they have no more value. James, it's not even 5 years, really, since the toppling of Libya, and already this is the situation.
Yes. In fact, it's been a mess since the very fall of Gaddafi, and this is the kind of story that makes me sick to my stomach to see a country that was no utopia, it was no nirvana, and Gaddafi was no angel or saint descended from heaven, but Libya certainly was not the hellhole that it is now. And all the people who were crying crocodile tears, oh, won't someone save the poor little Libyan children?
That has not been adjudicated, that's not been decided in a court of law. It's still
being argued
in a French court. The case was brought to this French court because French citizens, or France had standing to do this because French citizens also died when the plane was shot out of the sky.
And this war ultimately culminates in the triumph, the military triumph of Paul Kagame's Tutsi forces. Hutus then flee the country, many into Congo, and are pursued by the Tutsi Rwandan forces, leading to what some have called the largest genocide in the world since World War II.
They pursued Rwandan refugees all the way across Congo. And that war, the war that began in 1996, when Rwanda, Uganda, and at that time Burundi invaded the Congo, ultimately cost somewhere over, well over, 5.1 million lives. The figure 5.4 million was the conclusion of, I think it's the International Rescue Committee, and that was from 1997 to 2008.
In the interim, many more have died.
Yeah. And when the massacres began in the last 3 months in 1994, the UN Security Council considered some kind of intervention. And Madeleine Albright, representing Bill Clinton, prevented that from happening. U.S. troops were in Uganda, ready to move in once their guy had been put in power, Paul Kagame. And they were willing to tolerate whatever loss of life in order to see their guy take power. So it's not true that the U.S. or the West failed to intervene. In accordance with the will of the U.S., as expressed by Madeleine Albright in the Security Council, an intervention was actually stopped. So the intervention was to stop the intervention and let whatever happen in order to see their guy in power. So in the ideological infrastructure for humanitarian war, the argument is that we failed in Rwanda, therefore we have to bomb Syria, Libya, etc. But the fact is that we did intervene in Rwanda. We intervened to stop an intervention. And we backed the aggressive army from the beginning. In 1990, the army that invaded and waged a war that ended in these 100 days of bloodletting.
And so the U.S. crime of 1994 is vastly compounded by using a false version of what the U.S. actually did in 1994 as the philosophical and moral underpinnings for the doctrine of humanitarian military intervention.
Yeah, and I was just in Belgium at the Victoire Ingabire Mohosa Democracy and Peace Prize presentation, and I met with a number of young Rwandans who produce a publication called Jambo News for their refugee community and whoever else is interested in this story and its implications. And they told me that it was a large enough offense to have their story so mistold. But then on top of that, it's another great offense to have it used as an excuse to go to war.
So the terrible crime that was inflicted upon the Rwandan people is then magnified by misuse of the actual nature of the crime.
Exactly. Now, I'd really like to tell you about who won the Victoria Ingabire Mahosa Democracy and Peace Prize Award this year, but I should probably start by telling you who Victoria Ingabire Mahosa is. She's a Rwandan political prisoner who tried to run for president against Paul Kagame in 2010. She went to prison instead. She's been in prison for 7 years. And when she returned to Rwanda, the first thing that she did was go to the memorial, the genocide memorial in Kigali, and ask, where is the commemoration of Hutu people? And her stance has always been that in order for Rwanda to heal, everyone has to be able to mourn their dead. And that was enough to get her thrown under house arrest. And some months later, after the election, she was sent to 1930 prison, where she remains. And the Women's International Network for Democracy and Peace created this prize. And it was a brilliant bit of political organizing, because every year when people come together for this event, which is tons of fun, when they come together for this event, they meet one another. Some people are given the award. I was given the award in 2014. This increases their commitment. And everyone leaves with memories and commitments. And we don't forget Victoria Ingabire. And one thing that these young folks I met with who produced Jumbo Newsnet also said is that the exile and refugee community is discouraged. It's hard for them to see how things are ever going to get any better for their relatives in their homeland, or how all these extraditions for speech crime are going to stop. They don't see how this is going to end. Rwanda is such a ruthless, totalitarian society. Kagame's rule is such a ruthless, complete form of totalitarianism. And they said, however, that the one place where those who are so discouraged draw the line is Victoire Ingabire Umahosa. They are committed to her defense, no matter what. What she did was so courageous, to go back and say, okay, here I am. I am an unarmed woman. I want to challenge you for the presidency. To say this to one of the most brutal totalitarian rulers on the planet. And that challenge changed everything. That year, Rwanda's election got a lot more press. I'm proud to have been part of that. They told Victoria Ingabire not to speak to the press, and she did so anyway, if they called her. No press in Rwanda had the nerve to try to talk to her, but I started calling her and eventually was calling her most every week. And the BBC and ultimately the CBC covered it a bit. You know, there were a lot of assassinations, press assassinations, assassinations of Kagame's enemies outside the borders of Rwanda, even an assassination of an ICTR defense attorney who had a case on appeal in the ICTR appeals court, was representing a defendant whom the Rwandan government did not want to see acquitted. One of the other viable presidential candidates was also thrown in prison, and the vice president of the Rwandan Green Party was found with his head cut off on a riverbank. And this was covered, and it was the end of this fairy tale relationship that the West had had with Kagame, the hero who had led Rwanda to rise from the ashes of genocide to become a hope for all of Africa. He was feted throughout the West for many years until 2010, when this story began to crack, largely because Victoria Ingabire Umahosa returned to Rwanda and mounted this challenge.
And that legal battle over Victoire Ingabire Umahosa continues. It's now at the African Court of Human and People's Rights in Arusha, Tanzania.
Exactly. But at first, when the court accepted her appeal, the Kagame government said, no, we're going to withdraw from the court. The court responded, no, you can't do that. The rules of the court are that you have to give us a year's notice. So you can't just withdraw because you don't want to answer a particular case. So they said they would answer. They went through the initial proceedings, but when the first hearing took place last week, they didn't show up.
So here we have the government of Rwanda, which purports to play a role in reorganizing the African Union, actually bowing out or attempting to bow out of an important judicial arm of governance in Africa.
Well, absolutely. And the African Court of Human and People's Rights has the potential to be a continental court that could replace the ridiculously politically agendized prosecutions of the International Criminal Court, which has made African leaders who have fallen out of favor with the West its primary targets. And Rwanda, Uganda, South Africa, Burundi have all said that they're going to withdraw from the court. I don't know at what stage the formalities are right now, but an exodus, an African exodus from the International Criminal Court has begun. The African Court of Human and People's Rights has the potential to be a real African court.
But Rwanda is threatening to withdraw from it and not submit
yes.
to any outside intervention judicially.
They've said they're going to withdraw in a year, and with regard to this case, they've simply refused to show up.
Well, let me segue. I'll get back to Washington's humanitarian military doctrine based on a lie. And the lie is that we, you know, the never again is never again doing nothing in Rwanda. But, of course, the 1990 invasion of Rwanda by the U.S. Fort Leavenworth-trained Paul Kagame was our action. You funded it, Gringos. Let me segue to the civil case that I was playing the evidence from, number C03-336-SBA in U.S. District Court, Northern District, California, Oakland Division, the February 11, 2005, Third Amendment complaint under Civil Rights Act 42, U.S.C. Section 1983. Plaintiff hereby petitions for an injunction to stop defendant Watson's, because the judge, Senator Brown Armstrong, made me drop all these other defendants, but she didn't make the MP telling me arbitrarily I had to be 50 yards from the federal property on camera, which, you know, there's no basis for that, no due process involved. Anyway, plaintiff hereby petitions for an injunction to stop defendant Watson's threatened arrest of plaintiff within 50 yards of federal property. See 31003 videotape of defendant Watson making threat exhibit A. And what the hell? Back to that. I just said he'd rather be dead. Then get out of your way.
Cover story. I'm not saying that's true. You know, there's millions of soldiers that felt shamed to the core by that murderous act that the Nazis hadn't even equaled. Instantaneous murder of hundreds of thousands. Nazis couldn't even do that. They were trying, but that was because the Bush family was funding them. The seniors Bush had his bank seized.
I just missed all that about Bush Sr. having his bank seized for treating with Hitler.
With Rwanda and Uganda.
Well, that's very interesting because the Rwandan government and its sycophants all really wanted Hillary Clinton to win. The Rwandan government had such a close relationship with the Clintons. Bill Clinton was president when this intervention that was later called a failure to intervene took place. 1997, he went to Rwanda and shed crocodile tears about not having intervened, even though he did intervene to stop the intervention. And he's been shedding these crocodile tears ever since. He says over and over that failing to intervene in Rwanda was the greatest mistake of his presidency.
But the Rwandan government relies on the backing of the United States and, to a lesser extent, Great Britain for its ability to bully its neighbors in Africa.
Oh, yeah, and Israel. Can't forget Israel here. This weekend, Kagame is speaking at AIPAC. He is the first African leader to address AIPAC, the annual AIPAC public policy conference, and he's the only foreign head of state, aside from Benjamin Netanyahu himself, to be addressing AIPAC this year. And Israel and Rwanda have a very close bond. They have from the beginning after Kagame seized power. And Israel, which has a trademark on the word genocide, allowed Rwanda to use it. And they're very invested in this idea that what happened in Rwanda was like what happened in the Holocaust, that it was a majority population that attempted to destroy a minority population. And they've even added these stories. They've added like Rwanda wings to the National Holocaust Museum and Holocaust museums elsewhere in the world. The Holocaust and Rwanda, meaning the Rwandan genocide, are the two instances cited in the founding documents of humanitarian war ideology. The Carr Center for Human Rights at Harvard and the Pentagon produced a book called Mass Atrocity Response Operations, a Military Planning Handbook. And the starting point of this book is that the Holocaust was allowed to happen and the Rwandan genocide was allowed to happen. So we have to be prepared to intervene. And this is the military handbook for doing so. The Holocaust in Rwanda were also cited in Obama's executive order about stopping mass atrocities.
So any threat to this story of the Tutsi Holocaust represents a threat to the foundations of U.S. aggressive military policy in the world?
Yes, it threatens the whole ideological infrastructure of intervention that violates national sovereignty, humanitarian intervention to protect vulnerable civilian populations from their own governments. And Human Rights Watch, for example, is as committed to the idea that that's what's going on in Syria, that Russia and Assad are causing all the civilian casualties there, and we, the U.S. and the West, are therefore obliged to intervene to protect them and not doing enough. Their commitment to that story, no matter what, is as strong as their commitment to the Rwandan story, the mistold story that we failed to intervene when, in fact, we did intervene to stop an intervention.
Let me segue from her talking about Israel and the the exceptionalist franchise. Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has emerged as a significant influence within the policy-making apparatus of the White House after rather public imbroglio. But, Mike, oh God, dead air, bad news. Down, monitor. Okay, sorry. Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has emerged as a significant influence. Back down here. One more time from Strategic Culture News. Jared Kushner, suspected gangster within Trump White House. So Bannon was booted, and then we've got this shift back to the neocon. Everything that Hillary was. We escaped into this sick fart joke, cess of a human cesspool, precisely to avoid the Clinton death squad. My levels are crazy. Well, I know, because I've got this on 5%, so excuse my bad radio when I run around and jiggle with a little audacity thing up to 10%, which of course will make it overmodulated. So, our dear little robo DJ won't crash. We're using a second computer to record these shows. You just unplug it from one into the other, and then as long as they stay plugged in together, they'll be networked, and you can go pick it up from there. And I don't know how that works, but that's what's going on with my little running back and forth. And now I'm seeing my voice. So Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has emerged. Trump's adoption of Clinton-esque Democratic Party policies of opposing the Syrian government, confronting Russia, supporting NATO, backing the U.S. Export-Import Bank, EXIM, militarily confronting North Korea and China in East Asia, have neoconservative and globalist cheering, but many within Trump's political base of America First nationalists and libertarians are crying foul. The warning signs that Kushner was fronting for the neoconservatives was always present. Of course, his media company, Observer Media, which publishes the weekly online New York Observer, prominently featured several neoconservative writers. Kushner, who also led the real estate firm Kushner Companies, turned over control of the newspaper to his brother-in-law after being named senior advisor to President Trump. Kushner inherited a real estate empire from his father, Charles Kushner. In 2007, Jared made the largest single purchase of a single building in U.S. history, paid $1.8 billion for a 41-story building at 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. No relation to 415-9666. Our phone number here at Berkeley Berger. In 2015, Jared Kushner bought a 50.1% share in the Times Square building in Manhattan from Africa Israel Investments, LTD, AFI, an investment and holding company owned by Israeli-Uzbek diamond magnate Lev Leviev. In what could spell trouble for U.S. relations with Palestine and Africa, AFI has been involved in the building of illegal settlements on the West Bank and acquisitions of diamonds from Africa's bloodiest conflict zones. AFI and its subsidiary, Danya Cebus, D-A-N-Y-C-E-B-U-S, have been subjected to disinvestments by a number of governments and companies over its West Bank activities. In August 2010, the Norwegian pension fund divested into two firms. Leviev is also involved in dodgy casino operations, which puts him in the same business circles as casino operator Trump. In 2009, Playtex Cyprus Limited, one of AFI's companies, began providing casino equipment to a new casino in Bucharest, Romania. Playtex was started in 99 by four Israelis, Teddy Saji, Elad Cohen, Rami Benish, B-E-I-N-I-S-H, and Amon Ben-Zion. Playtex online gambling software is primarily provided for software programs in Estonia. Saji is a convicted stock fraudster, having been convicted of fraud in 96 Discount Bank Affair, a stock and bond manipulation scheme that shook Tel Aviv business community. Leviev's Africa diamond mining operations involved several former Mossad officers, most notably in Sierra Leone, Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, Namibia, and Angola. The narrow gap of separation between Jared Kushner and some of Israel's top gangsters is cause for alarm. The situation became especially acute after it was revealed that Kushner failed to provide all the requested information on his national security questionnaire forms concerning his contacts with foreign persons and interests, has led for congressional calls for a security clearance to be suspended. Feud between Jared Kushner and Bannon is not the first personality conflict Kushner has had with members of the Trump team. The first demonstration of Kushner's powerful influence over Trump was evidenced in his firing of Trump's transition team chairman, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and his loyalists, who included former U.S. Representative Mike Rogers and Matthew Friedman. For Kushner, the firing were an ultimate payback for Christie. While U.S. Attorney for Northern New Jersey, Christie successfully prosecuted Kushner's father for tax evasion, witness tampering, and illegal campaign contributions. Christie wanted a 3-year prison sentence for the elder Kushner, but he ended up serving a year at a federal penitentiary in Alabama. Christie's federal law enforcement investigation discovered Charles Kushner tried to lure his brother-in-law and employee William Schulder into a prostitution honey trap at the Red Bull Inn Motel in Bridgewater, New Jersey. The elder Kushner paid $10,000 to a high-end prostitute who reportedly worked for a Manhattan escort agency linked to the Mossad, to lure Schulder into a trap complete with a videotape system designed to prevent him from testifying on behalf of Christie at Kushner's trial. After Schulder's wife was sent a videotape of the tryst at the motel, Christie managed to not only ensure that an embarrassed but angered Schulder remained a star witness, but also got the prostitute to testify against Kushner. Another witness for the prosecutors, Robert Yontef, Kushner's chief bookkeeper, was also subjected to a Kushner prostitution trap and a smoking gun videotape arranged by another call girl hired by Kushner. Charles Kushner also managed to get New Jersey Democratic Governor Jim McGreevy to appoint him to the New Jersey Port Authority Commission, which owned the World Trade Center, a plum position on 9/11 for a suspected asset of Israel's Mossad. Hudson County and New Jersey law enforcement authorities were well aware that Mossad elements were involved in many of the intelligence activities surrounding and in support of the 9/11 event in the months leading up to the attack in 2001. Attack? You mean that? Defense holiday, the Pentagon drone strikes, triple demolitions, and the Kushner family appears to relish in the politics of revenge and blackmail, as McGreevy discovered the hard way. While he was mayor of Woodbridge, McGreevy met an Israeli intelligence asset named Golan Sippel during a 2000 fact-finding trip to Israel managed by Charles Kushner, who was a generous donor to McGreevy's political coffers. Although the trip was sponsored by the United Jewish Federation of Metro West, the goal was to ensure future loyalty from an up-and-coming New Jersey politician being groomed for governor of his state. Sippel was the chief spokesman for the Israeli city of Rishon LeZion, but he soon ended up on McGreevy's gubernatorial campaign staff thanks to the influence, U.S. work visa clearance, and money arranged by the elder Kushner. It is noteworthy that Rishon LeZion represents one of the right-wing Likud party's most important bases of support in Israel. A powerful political kingmaker, Charles Kushner secured McGreevy's Democratic nomination for the governor race after seeking the support that is arm-twisting the Democratic Party chairman of the counties of Union, Essex, Middlesex, and Camden. After becoming governor, McGreevy appointed Sippel, an Israeli national and employee of Kushner, as his chief counsel on political strategy, foreign affairs, and relations with the Jewish community. But it was McGreevy's appointment of Sippel as his director for Homeland Security that raised eyebrows across the state, especially after 9/11/01. It should always say. During McGreevy's governorship, Sippel decided to file a sexual harassment lawsuit against the governor in Mercer County Court. Sippel, a one-time diplomat, read that as Mossad agent at the Israeli Consulate General in New York, in a single legal action destroyed McGreevy's political career. The suit forced McGreevy, who was married with two children, to admit that he led a parallel and secret gay lifestyle. With that bombshell news hitting the media, McGreevy was forced to resign. Several New Jersey political observers believe that Charles Kushner was behind Sippel's lawsuit after McGreevy did not turn out as the kind of puppet Kushner expected him to be. In fact, during the Sippel suit, McGreevy's lawyers contacted the Federal Bureau of Investigation and tipped them off about a possible Kushner-Sippel extortion operation directed against the governor. Undoubtedly, Christie, who had his eyes already set upon New Jersey governor's mansion in Princeton, knew all about the role that Charles Kushner played in the ultimate blackmailing one of his predecessors as governor. With the sort of background information possessed by a federal prosecutor like Christie, who had access to what? Tap transcripts gathered from the Kushner family phone and other communications, it is clear that Jared Kushner saw Christie as a major threat to the future Kushner family agenda within the Trump administration. With Christie and possibly soon Bannon out of the way, Jared Kushner will be able to cement his Svengali-like control over Trump. Considering the record of political muscle exercised by the Kushner clan against two New Jersey governors, one can only surmise the Kushners have a great deal of blackmailable information on Mr. Trump. Oh, and that was Strategic Culture, Jared Kushner, suspected gangster within Trump White House. And I had read from Counterpunch on how the Ivanka getting her husband to bleed crocodile tears and forced him to watch that snuff film where the Death Squad, Clooney Gang's white helmets jab a syringe in the heart of a one-year-old and don't even plunge the don't even inject the adrenaline, which we wouldn't even do because, of course, you got a 1-year-old OD'd on opiates. The blood is still pumping, you know. I mean, 50 years ago, you might have done that with someone whose blood isn't running around. But here you have, you can see there, you know, and you would pump the blood around. You do, but anyway, there's so many things on that. Let's go to
This is what Putin had to say about the
YouTube.
Before I get to that, I want to remind you that this whole Syria thing is not as it appears. Do you think we want to go into Syria because he gases people? Then why did we want to go into Syria in 2005? What? We wanted to go in Syria in 2005? Yeah. Here's Christine Amanpour from CNN interviewing Bashar al-Assad in 2005. Listen to what she has to say in 2005.
You know, the rhetoric of regime change is headed towards you from the United States. They are actively looking for a new Syrian leader. They're granting visas and visits to Syrian opposition politicians. They're talking about isolating you diplomatically and perhaps a coup d'etat or your regime crumbling. What are you thinking about that?
That was 2005. What was the reason back then? But did he gas people back then too? Was that too close to the Iraq war? So we go into Iraq. Mm. They wanted to go into Syria. We went into Libya, Afghanistan. It's almost exactly like General Wesley Clark said it was going to happen. So in 2005, that's 2005, after we just did Iraq. We're on our way to doing Libya, and they wanted to also do Syria.
So many of them.
That's 2000. Oh, yeah.
Where do we start? Okay, let's start with the VT, Veterans Today, where I work. And you used to work, Tony, until exactly 1 year ago. Has been under hacker attack all week. Actually, like ever since the Syria sarin thing, VT has been very slow or down pretty much the whole time. And it's still, they're still trying to fight off these hackers. Why? Well, this is the story. Over 100,000 reads. Swedish Medical Association exposes the white helmets, sarin false flags, and murdering children.
Yes, these white helmets are quite big news. Assad himself was interviewed this week on Agence France-Presse, saying that al-Nusra and al-Qaeda, they simply change clothes, and one minute they're the terrorists, and the next minute they're white helmets. It's quite a showbiz spectacle, and of course, Veterans Today goes a step further in saying, well, they're actually murdering children, not simply taking advantage of the filming of children seeming to be dead or die.
That's right. In one of those video segments, the child appears to be dead, and they're pretending to do a heart resuscitation that would be a protocol for chemical weapons. But what they're actually doing is shoving the needle into the heart and wiggling it around, and they never pull the plunger. So that's it. Basically, that would kill the kid. And it looks like the kid, at first it looks like the kid is dead, but then if you look closely, it appears that he's merely in the throes of a narcotics overdose. So the interpretation there that Veterans Today has come to is that they shot up a kid with a narcotics overdose, and as he was dying, they shoved a needle into his heart, wiggled it around, and didn't even bother to pull the plunger to make it look like they were really trying to help somebody that had been struck with chemical weapons. So this is pretty horrific, and no wonder the usual suspects have gone after VT on the internet and basically either taken it down or slowed it down massively over the past 10 days.
Well, today we're going into a massive onslaught of different ways of interpreting what has been going on in Syria with the gassing, with the invasion, spinning it this way and that way. So let's move through some of these different perspectives, because this is a classic story. Given what we do and how we analyze news.
Absolutely.
Well, and try to distinguish between illusion and what is true.
And in this last story, this isn't just Veterans Today saying this. This is a leading Swedish human rights organization, Swedish Doctors for Human Rights, that exposed this. Well, in the next slide, we see the questions about the White House 4-page memo. This is not an official U.S. intelligence assessment from any agencies. It's just a White House memo putting out this ridiculous story about sarin gas. Tony, did this look as self-refuting to you as it does to me?
Absolutely. And, of course, this comes from Robert Perry, Consortium News, and Robert Perry had a big role in breaking Iran-Contra story and was very early on to sort of using the internet as a alternative approach to the mainstream media. So I take him very seriously. He's got an account here that possibly a drone took off from a Saudi-Israeli operation base, that's what he calls it, in Jordan, and that the sarin gas or some kind of gas may have been spread from this drone. But he makes the point that this is one of many ways this event is being interpreted. But the one thing that everybody is saying that we're looking at is that the White House has not proven its case, has simply asserted things without any evidence. And created a heck.
We have other videos that debunk the first gas attack in 2013. They blamed on Assad. It wasn't him. It was the ISIS rebels. ISIS rebels who we're supporting. So you know, the United States is supporting ISIS in Syria. We're training them and arming them. That's happening. Just so you know, that's happening. So that was debunked that time. And, this time it's the same thing. Just so you know, the last time we were sure we had chemical weapons, 1 million people died. Just so you know, we were super sure. And the media was super sure too. Just so you remember. So now here's what Putin had to say about the gas attack. Now, just so you know, it makes absolutely no sense that Bashar al-Assad would do a chemical attack because he was winning the civil war. They had ISIS on the run, and anywhere they were surrounded. And they were winning the war. They were liberating towns from terrorists like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and al-Nusra. Assad was doing that in Syria because it's not a real civil war. It's a war being financed by Saudi Arabia and Qatar to overthrow Assad so they can put a pipeline through it. That's what this is about, which you're not going to hear on MSNBC or CNN or the New York Times or the Washington Post. So they're doing it again. They're trying to do a false flag gas attack to the United States, Bob, which we're doing. And here's what Putin had to say.
Здравый смысл говорит сам за себя. Сирийские правительственные войска наступают. В некоторых регионах они окружили повстанцев.
The Syrian army was on the offensive. In some places, they have surrounded the rebels entirely. For them to suddenly give away the trump card to those who continually call for regime change is, frankly, a crock of shit. Thank you, Vladimir.
В этих условиях давать козырь тем, кто постоянно призывает к внешнему военному вмешательству, просто дурь несусветная. Это не...
So what he's saying is, why would that, doesn't make any sense that when they're winning the war and on the brink of ending it, they would then hand a trump card to their opponent to call the biggest superpower in the world into the war. That's
not to say that Putin didn't blow up his own people as gringo skanky Yankees are so fond of saying, because the fifth bomb, we know, didn't go off. They spotted the covered-up license from out of town in Riazan, and they caught the FSB, who flashed their badges, saying, oh, no, that was sugar. Well, when they put it in their coffee, they found out it was hexogen, which has made it a secure military place. Now, when we see the KGB conspiring in this post-9/11 turf war over Caspian oil, by not grabbing Bandar Bush after he publicly threatens the Winter Olympics in Zoki, we see that, okay, even though he doesn't act like he was blowing up the apartments and staging all that so he could go bomb Chechnya, of course you're not supposed to act like you're staging it. You act like it's them hitting us. And, of course, it was the KGB and the CIA cooperating, because it wasn't until this anti-Russian frenzy that's driving Michael Flynn and Bannon, two reprehensible creatures, but they're not going to be in bed with our medieval shithooks. You know, their xenophobia is too extreme for that. So there's a limitation on how evil you can be unless you're a little slicker than these dodo birds surrounding Trump now. But
Well, anyway.
Doesn't make any sense that they would hand them, here you go. Oh, if we get caught using this gas, that the United States will come overthrow us? Let's try it anyway, even though we're winning. So that's what Putin's saying. So it doesn't make any sense, which it doesn't make any sense. You'll never hear that on fucking CNN.
It's completely illogical, especially as it took place during the visit of a UN observer.
Еще в день приезда наблюдателей ООН. Поэтому я убежден, что это не более...
I am more than assured that this was simply provocation on behalf of those that would like to pull other countries into this war, that would like to garner support from other militaries, the U.S. primarily.
Чем провокация тех, кто хочет втянуть другие страны в сирийский конфликт, кто хочет добиться поддержки со стороны могущих...
Can you? I don't know if people can read that. So I'll read it for him. Should I read it for him? Here, I'll read it for
him.
He said, I am more than assured that this was simply provocation on behalf of those that would like to pull other countries into the war, that would like to garner support from other militaries, the U.S. primarily.
The U.S. is so, committed that it's going to say something it hasn't ever said before. It's pointing to the inside job of the Moscow apartment bombings blamed on Chechnyas, because This American Life had that fifth bomb story. They got caught because the bomb didn't go off, because they said, oh, we're FSB agents. And so there's pictures. They left the timer and everything behind. And so it's like the Litvinenko was poisoned with polonium in his tea. Polonium is only available at these highly secure places, and just a few of them. And KGB's got one of them. FSB, Federal Security Bureau.
Участников международной деятельности, прежде всего, конечно, Соединенных Штатов. У меня в этом сомнений нет.
I have no doubts about this.
Что касается позиции наших американских,
when it comes to the position of our American friends,
тех друзей, которые утверждают, что
they keep saying that Syrian government forces were the ones that had used the chemical weapons, and they have evidence.
Правительственные войска применили оружие массового уничтожения, в данном случае химическое оружие, то и говорят, что у них есть такие доказательства, но пусть тогда они...
Well, then show us said evidence. Show the UN observers and show us at the Security Council.
Предъявят инспекторам ООН и в Совет Безопасности ссылки на то, что у них такие доказательства есть, но они секретные, они никому не могут их...
Saying that you have evidence, but it is secret and not available for scrutiny, it's simply disrespectful to your partners in the international community.
Не выдерживает никакой критики. Это просто неуважение к своим партнерам и к участникам международной деятельности. Если есть доказательства, они должны быть предъявлены. Если они не предъявлены, значит их нет.
If evidence exists, it must be shown. If it's not shown, then it does not exist.
Ссылки на то, что это какие-то очередные перехваты каких-то переговоров, которые ничего...
Alluding to some intercepted conversations which prove absolutely nothing at all cannot serve as justification to attack a sovereign country.
Доказывают. Не могут быть положены в основу принятия таких фундаментальных решений, как применение силы в отношении суверенного государства.
So that's what he had to say about it. And, I don't know, makes fucking perfect sense. It makes a lot more sense than anybody in the United States making talking about Syrian conflict right now. In fact, that makes sense. Everything that's being said in the U.S. media makes zero sense. Zero. No sense. Oh, this guy's a butcher. He's so dumb that even on the brink of when he's winning the war, he's going to use gas, which he doesn't need to use, which he knows will draw the United States in. Ha, he's so dumb, I guess. He's just a dummy. But he's an evil dummy who's a butcher, he's a bad dictator, and he hurts innocent people. Doesn't the United States bomb hospitals? Didn't you just kill a million people in Iraq? Don't you do the same thing in Libya? What about Afghanistan?
Haven't written a single word about Libya since mission accomplished, Gaddafi's gone, we got our military objective. I don't care about Libya anymore. And I'm not saying that just off the top of my head. I'm saying that advisedly. Look at someone like Nick Kristof, who wrote half a dozen editorials in 2011 alone, saying, oh, won't somebody bomb Libya? We need to bomb Libya. You have to go bomb Libya, guys. It's such a humanitarian disaster. The only way to save it is with our humanitarian love bombs. And since September 7th, 2011, want to guess how many columns Nick Kristof has devoted to Libya? Precisely zero.
Afghanistan, they should just drop the biggest bomb on. What about your drone program? 90% of the people killed by your drones are innocent civilians. We care about these specific people that get killed by gas. Yeah, what about the people you kill with your jets? That's an accident. That's a whoopsie. We didn't do it on purpose, like him. Well, you know, if you use a drone, 90% of the people that you kill are going to be civilians. Yeah, we do know that, but we don't do it on purpose. Well, that has to be on purpose. That's like drunk driving. I don't mean to kill anybody, but I get drunk and I go driving and I know I will kill someone. You drop a drone, you know you're going to kill innocent people. Yeah, but we didn't mean to. Remember what Donnie Tanahan used to say about this
Garrison,
war?
Speaking from Berkeley, California.
Let's get out of Afghanistan. Our troops are being killed by the Afghanis. We train United and we waste billions there. Nonsense. Rebuild the USA. So that's more about Afghanistan, not about Syria. But remember what he used to say, that stuff? That's why he got elected, because he spoke like a populist. That's what people want. That's the policy people want.
It says, this is Donald J. Trump, let's get out of Afghanistan. Our troops are being killed by the Afghanis. We train and we waste billions there. Nonsense. Rebuild the USA. Oh, yeah. So the WikiLeaks has that the caves that Trump used WMD on were built by the CIA. Same thing he's talking about there.
We don't get it with Barack Obama. We elect a black guy with a Muslim name. We get a fucking right-wing military-industrial complex foreign policy. We elect a billionaire fucking racist with a populist message. We get a right-wing military-industrial complex policy. So I'm still suggesting to everyone stop listening to the assholes on mainstream news media. On TV, in the Washington Post and the New York Times, stop listening to those fucking assholes. Because they are. And they're worthless. And we have to overcome them. And you see why horrible shit happens in the world.
Well, it's because you're not out at 5300 Port Chicago Highway, standing in the way, saying, over my dead body.
I feel like an angel. Sometimes I feel like the devil. Sometimes I am free. Sometimes I am bound. And I have been recruited. I've been persecuted, and it just seems to keep coming round. Yes, but I am not afraid of the man today, 'cause he revealed himself in a past life interaction we had. Make no mistake, he burned me at the stake, but it did not hurt that bad, because I breathe in the air. I invoke the water, I honor the earth, I burned in the fire, I breathe in the air. I invoke the water, I honor the earth, I burn in the fire, breathe in the air. Invoke the water, honor the earth, burn in the fire, breathe in the air. She takes me between the two worlds. She's got magic in her dark wings. In her heart lies the blue pearl.
When the whole night's the loneliness, and always will be.
Oh gosh, I have to tell my funny little story. So after I was out at the tracks for an hour looking for bombs, explosives, or have these orange diamonds that you watch for to stand in front of, with your camera running, of course, and your federal court injunction prohibiting torture if you are nonviolent, which means that you can passively resist. Anyway, forgot what I was going to say.
Someday you'll return to your valleys and your farms.
So the guard that found me hiding in the bushes across the street, my little secret hiding spot with my little no WMD sign, after my hour of sitting out, you know, showing all the public, getting the thumbs up and the waves and stuff, mostly, I didn't get any bad, you know, I didn't get flipped off once. But, oh yeah, so they used to always, you know, the guards would all, you know, van full of soldiers would all be flipping the protesters off until Tom and Dan saved Mike Darby Bates and his buddy racing around 9 miles an hour past the tracks. They hit a car doing the blind curve thing. And they did CPR and brought him back so he could talk to his family before he died from broken neck and all, but he's saying, so he finds me in the bushes there, and they say, why are you wearing cat fatigues? I thought you were a peace person. I said, oh, I'm a felonious farmer. We we have the same MO.
And you no longer burn to be prisoners. Through these fields of destruction, baptisms of fire, I've witnessed your suffering as the battle reaches time, and only a in the fear and the alarm, you did not desert me, my brothers and I. so many different souls, and we have just one mind, but we live in different worlds. Sun's gone to hell, and the moon riding high. Let me bid you farewell. Every man has to die, but it's written in the stars. In every line in your palm, we're fools to make one of our brothers in arms.
I'll have to get around to taking issue with Country Joe's song about a combat nurse, you know, the 45, because how can you have a Hippocratic oath saying do no harm and strap on a homicidal instrument like that? Well, never mind. I got an article from April 11th, 1977. Florence McDonald, sensing that the dangers of fascism was far more imminent than the possibility of revolution, she reluctantly supported FDR while working at the same time with the American League Against Foreign Fascism, whose intent was to expose America's role in building the military machines of Germany, Italy, and Japan. Wearing their symbolic Lederhosen, stockings made of cotton instead of fashionable Japanese silk, McDonald helped picket ships cargoed with scrap iron for Japan and was again arrested. So the point being that before World War II, everybody's saying, oh, he's Hitler. People are saying Assad is Hitler, blah, blah, blah. Well, what was going on with the fascists? You know, America was arming them, giving scrap Germany during the rape of Nanking. The plunder of all that gold that was then used to crash the ruble when Marcos got shaken down by the color revolution. But just to point out that if you're going to fight these Takfiri killer cretins, then you could just stop arming them. And that's what Country Joe's mom was doing before World War II, blocking the arming of the enemy. And the whole concept of enemy, even, is us. You know, we were the enemy that she was standing in the way of, because the fascists are the people that sell scrap during the rape of Nanking. Thank you.
You see, look at the media. Look at the politicians. Look at this. You ever see that movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? That was back frickin' in the, what was that, the 40s? It's a million times worse now. And
They didn't see Mr. Smith, but here's the thumbnail sketch. So Jimmy Stewart, he's like going to jump off the bridge for the insurance to save, you know, everybody, because Mr. Potter gave his brother the key to the money box to take to the racetrack. That's what Mr. Bill did when they abolished Glass-Steagall. So that's a shorthand of all that.
And everybody knows it. Well, I don't know if everybody knows it. That's why I'm telling you. Everybody in the know knows it. Everybody at MSNBC knows they're full of shit, by the way. They do. They do. But $30,000 a day gets you to say a lot of bullshit. Rachel Maddow is a fucking bullshitter. And a menace to our country.
Word. They don't care about the people they're claiming they're trying to save with these humanitarian love bombings. So let's transpose that 6 years forward to 2017. Does that remind you of any situations going on right now? Oh, that's right. Oh, we have to save the Syrian people from Assad, who obviously chemical weaponed his own people on the eve of the peace talks. There's no question about it, although we have zero proof of that whatsoever, and you shouldn't ask for any, and if you do, you're a Russian agent who deserves to go to hell. And we care so much about the Syrian children. And as soon as Assad is toppled, want to guess how many columns people like Nick Kristof are going to devote to the Syrian people and their ongoing struggles as they descend into this type of nightmare chaos that Libya is in? I'm going to guess zero. What do you think? It's crocodile tears, and it makes me sick to my stomach that these hypocrites continue to get away with propagating this vile, disgusting nonsense about this humanitarian love bombings.
James, it was, I guess, still kind of a developing story when you and I were taping New World Next Week last week, hence no inclusion of the Syrian gas attack in last week's New World Next Week episode. But that's what I was thinking, just as you were heading into that area. Nick Kristof can't write articles about Libya. They're probably all writing articles about Syria, as, again, the agenda rolls forward. And we'll illustrate yet again how the agenda rolls forward, even though the faces and the R's and the D's might change every 4 to 8 years, with our second story on this episode 306 for New World Next Week. For April 13th, 2017, Sessions orders DOJ to end Forensic Science Commission and suspend the review policy. We take this via the Washington Compost, a.k.a. Democracy Dies in Darkness Daily.
Heck of a situation where essentially Trump has betrayed his major base. And the whole thing was build up America, America first. No. Trump is now under the control of the Hillary Clintonites, the neocons, or as Alex Jones calls them, the globalists, and he's betrayed his base, and that's a huge, huge story.
Well, I think Trump scammed his base from the beginning. I think Trump was selected to be a hardcore war president. Hillary would have been a lighter. She would have been war president light. Trump is maximum war president. That's what he was always created to be, in my humble opinion. But we'll talk about that later, because we're still on this story about how Trump has given us this 4-page supposed assessment, but they can't tell us what the evidence is because it might reveal protected sources and methods. It reminds us a lot of the Iraqi WMD, and it reminds us of how after 9/11, Tony Blair and the White House claimed they had evidence that bin Laden was behind it and they would release it, and they never did. So once again, secret evidence. We're going to kill huge numbers of people and risk giant wars on evidence that we can't show you.
Oh, you can trust us.
Of course.
Donald Trump
has given greater latitude to the military to conduct strikes with almost no regard for civilians. Just in the March, in the month of March, Brian, U.S. and allied forces have killed more than 1,000 civilians in Iraq and Syria, according to the nonpartisan independent group Air Wars. Trump is funneling weapons and intelligence to the Saudis that are being used to utterly destroy Yemen at this point. The United States has been engaged militarily in Syria for several years now, both in the form of special operations forces and increasingly conventional boots on the ground, but also just scorched earth bombing, particularly since Trump took office. And I have to say, Brian, that Arwa Damon is a fantastic reporter. I have great respect for her. But I think when we talk about this, CNN needs to immediately withdraw all retired generals and colonels from its airwaves. You know, Fareed Zakaria, if that guy could have sex with this crew,